Do you feel like your business is running your life instead of the other way around? I'm Roy Castleman. I've built multiple seven-figure companies, worked across continents, and coached high-performing entrepreneurs. But I've also been completely burnt out. At one point, I was barely seeing my daughter, drowning in stress, and one step away from walking away from it all. That's when I made a decision to build a business and a life that works for me. The journey became Elevate 360. A system to help business owners reclaim their time, find their energy again, and get back in control without sacrificing growth. And this podcast, Power Movers, is where I share real stories behind that shift. Each week, you'll hear from entrepreneurs, founders, and leaders who've walked through the fire and come out of the other side with clarity, courage, and a system that works. If you're ready to build a business that gives you more life instead of taking it away, you're in the right place. I'm here today with Sharon from Humanity Works. And I met Sharon last week at a peer-to-peer event that was hosted by Miles. And we had this amazing group of, I think it was 12 people, wasn't it, in the room?
Yeah.
And I just love this coming together of business owners because, you know, we're such a unique breed, I think. And, you know, we have so much to share with each other. But it's a lonely life as well, being an entrepreneur and a business owner, because you go through life with you're telling your family about all the things you're doing and they're just not really that interested anymore. So Sharon, tell us a little bit about yourself and Humanity Works, and we'll dig in from there.
Yeah, thank you, Roy. It was such a pleasure to meet you at that event. And I definitely felt such an incredible connection. So I'm very grateful to you for having me on your podcast. So I'm Sharon Aneja. I am the Chief Heart Officer at Humanity Works Consultants.
I love that. Yeah.
It's the job title, right? So Humanity Works Consultancy, we are a corporate coaching and training company. We coach teams to deliver high performance in a human-centered way. Our operating system is something called Resilience 2.0. And Resilience 2.0 is coaching teams to be more accountable, to build more trust, and to grow stronger from hard times together so that they can deliver that high performance in a human-centered way. We work with mainly corporates, so very large scale organizations in the tech sector, in the finance sector, so really in very high pressure situations, as well as working with some public sector clients as well, who also have incredible stress levels, but for different reasons. We've been going for about 5 years now. I used to be a corporate leader myself until I saw the light and retrained as a coach and set up my own coaching business. And Roy, as you well know, there's a kind of a backstory to that and why I left that world, temporarily left that world. I'm still in it very much, but as an outside contributor. We work with CEOs, senior leaders in organizations, leaders who are basically looking to increase the output, improve the culture, and really improve the performance in their teams. And that's why they come to us. I think it's no coincidence that in a time of an AI drive and expansion, that my company, Humanity Works, has had its best year to date last year. And I think there's this real desire to come back to those human skills and cultivate that human intelligence. And that doesn't detract from the need for artificial intelligence. It's completely still there. And we use it a lot in Humanity Works. It's a game changer for us, as it is for many of our clients as well. But it's also, I think, making people appreciate the human side of things, the human capacity, and how actually we need this delicate interplay between the artificial intelligence and the human intelligence. And we need those things together to really be able to create that success. And I think that's true for business owners, small and medium-sized businesses, as it is for the very large corporates as well, who we tend to work with. So I think the lessons are the same, and I see the parallels are there, whether you're an SME or whether you're running these big corporates.
Yeah, I think it's so interesting. You've been in the game, yeah, probably as long as I have. And yeah,
don't tell people my age, Roy.
Not quite as long as I have. They'll never believe me anyway, Sharon. They'll never believe me. Yeah. So I went through working in the city and doing the long hours and sleeping under my desk and having to entertain people until 3 in the morning and then be at work at 7 and all those type of things and sleeping an hour and a half a day for 4 months on end. And so I've been through that, and those times in the city were different times, and there were times when the harshness of corporate reality was there. And you'd see the corporate didn't have a heart, right? And now I think it's just so beautiful that the world is coming around to that you tie at the corporate's heart to the profitability, because if the corporate has a heart, they are much more profitable. And it's taken so long for corporates to realize, actually, do you know what? We need to respect our staff. We need to understand our staff. We need to feed what they're doing, because if we don't, we just don't get the output, and then they burn out, and then we have to get a new staff member, and there's all those costs with that. So have you seen this interplay and change over the last few years? And obviously you went through that, and we'll talk about that in a bit. But have you seen this same shift that I've seen? And okay, now we need to dig in and we need to support our staff.
Yeah, and thank you for sharing that, Roy. I really relate to that story. And as you were talking about the kind of sleeping under your desk and sleeping for an hour and a half, I was thinking, yep, live that life too. And actually,
A
Roy.
bubble wrap, because that's what I could find in the cupboard for the
Yeah,
day.
what you mean? Oh my God, some of the environments I worked in, someone was lying on the floor. People wouldn't even check to see if they're okay. They'd just step over them and carry on. And that was just the reality. I think though that's still true today. I don't think, I think things have shifted. I think my very existence as a chief heart officer would demonstrate that. I'm not the only chief heart officer in the world. There is one other. Her name is Claude Silver. She is the chief heart officer at VaynerMedia. So I'm sure you're familiar with Gary Vee, the
Gary,
super entrepreneur. And actually, the chief heart officer role is in existence because of Gary Vee. And I think of Gary Vee as someone who's like 100 steps ahead of everyone else. Like he sees the
love it, Roy.
trends, yeah, before everyone else does. And he's really someone who I think he was very ahead of the game. I know he's a bit like Marmite. Some people love him and they hate him, and that's fine. But a lot of what he says is true, the truth, a truth anyway. And he actually said, when he created the chief heart officer role in his organization, he said he wanted to create the most human-centered organization on the planet. And he created the chief heart officer role because he wanted this person to individually touch every single person in that organization with empathy, with humanity, with kindness, and with respect. Because he believes that is the most important role that exists in that organization. And he says that in his organ in VaynerMedia, the chief heart officer has as much say over who gets hired and fired as the chief finance officer. Because what they're doing is, and I think this is brilliant, and this is absolutely the way forward, is that they're quantifying the human factor within their organization. So they're saying this person is a high performer because we're not just looking at the numbers, but because they're a great team player, because they make the people around them better, because they treat people with respect, they elevate the skills of others. And so it's not just, is this person bringing in a ton of business? Is this person a great person, exactly the kind of person we want in the organization who helps other people to thrive as well? And
This
I'm
is
not
about
saying,
serving your core values, right?
Yeah. And I'm not saying that you either have the atypical high performer and you have the team player. We can be both. And that's very much the Humanity Works philosophy, that actually you can have high performance in a human-centered way, which is exactly what they're driving at Vayner as well. And he said the other day on an interview, he said there need to be more chief heart officers in this world. And actually, I never gave myself the title of Chief Heart Officer. It's actually something my clients gave me. So I was working with a brilliant Silicon Valley-based, actually they're an AI company, Roy, you'd like them a lot. And they've had me in now for the last 3 years. Humanity Works has been their coaching partner for the last 3 years. And so they're at the forefront of agentic and integrative AI. They are really driving that space, and they've been in it for quite a long time. And they very much see the value of having that human workplace, of building that human culture. And
And that's really where we're starting. Sorry to interrupt. That's really where we're starting. Yeah, I love this element that's coming out with AI, because what we're going to be able to do as humans is we're going to be able to elevate ourselves as much as possible. And when we elevate ourselves, what we're going to be able to elevate ourselves with is our humanity. We must remember that AI is trained on humans. AI is trained on how we think and on our brains and on our patterns. So being more human is going to be better. Communicating better, understanding how to talk AI is actually understanding how to talk human better. And one of the big lessons that I've had is that AI is actually teaching me how to communicate better. That sounds like random, but if I'm not clear in what I'm saying to AI, if I'm not setting the context, I'm not setting what I need to in the proper way, then that's what I get back. It's not good. In the very same way that if I have a staff member come in and I say, just go over there and do that, and I presume that they know exactly, what's going on, then they'll go away and I'll come back and I'll say, what is this you're giving me? And that's my fault, right? So once I can understand that and I can get through that, then I'm like, okay, and it's helping me communicate with my parent, my mom better, and my staff better, my friends, my family, my partner, all of these things. It allows me to actually look at myself as a human and say, okay, I'm not actually getting this right. So I need to evolve, I need to grow, I need to upskill. So it's super interesting that this is something that one of the leaders in this field is doing.
Absolutely. I think the fact that these companies, and so many of them, like I said, our clients are in the tech space, are investing in a human-led approach says a lot that actually they value that, and that's actually making them more successful, and that's actually propelling their teams, and as a result, they're more innovative. They're more creative. The output is better because actually the inputs are better. And just as you've described here, like just looking at an LLM, ChatGPT, if the prompt is strong, what you'll get back is really strong, right? And you can see this shift back now to more human-led experiences. There's more emphasis now on handcrafted items. It's almost like the pendulum is swinging back, and we're coming into a rebalancing. As a Libran, I love rebalancing. I'm all about balance. So I'm seeing actually people are wanting to handwrite more. I'm seeing a bigger uptake in journaling, sorry, again. All of these things are coming back to our core, our humanity, what makes us infinitely human. And I think there's a lot of fear out there. AI is going to take our jobs, we're going to be replaced. And actually, I would say to people, well, slow your roll. Okay, no one's being replaced right now. Let's just put this into perspective. But also, don't forget that AI, this idea that AI can completely replace humans, we're not really there yet. You'll need a completely different setup for that to happen. And I think a lot of organizations aren't really there. The second thing is that, like you say, our humanity, our human skills is what is actually going to drive the AI. And so, actually, you focusing more on that and being better at that and elevating those human skills gives you back your competitive edge. And so, I'm seeing with the companies who are forward thinking, who are a lot very strategic, that is why they're investing in elevating their people's human skills and not just rushing to say, how do you write a good prompt in AI, or how do you learn whatever technical skills you need in order to be able to use agentic AI or whatever the version of it that they're going after? So I think that is really important for people to understand. And I think those that get it, they really get it, and they're investing big in it.
And this re really, there's this whole concept of how AI is going to come into the world and what we're doing with it. I think it comes back to where we've been over the last 50, 100, 200 years. We've had to be in this previous evolution of where we were, and now we're stepping into a new space. And this new space, we have to evolve. And what I love about AI, what it's really done for me, it's allowed me to take the thinking out of my brain. And beforehand, we have to take all this information in. We have to learn, we have to learn, we have to learn. We pull this in, and then we process, and then we can do some output. And now we don't need to. We can process inside, We can go out and get some information, and get information, and we don't even need to know where that information is. We just need to know what the problem is. So we can start with the problem and say, Mr. AI, I have this problem. Who's the best person in the world to help me fix this problem? And then going through this guiding process. So it really gives us this ability to have 50 more IQ points on a day-by-day basis. And if you've ever sat in a room with somebody that's got 50 more IQ points, and you're like, oh, okay, this is leveling up. So it gives us this evolution ability to level up and to understand the world from a whole different perspective. Yeah, my partner's also into Libra, Cancer, all this space. And she uses it to go through the process of actually getting the AI to work out a chart and where she is and how this works. And
Fantastic.
and just having different ideas. So you can sit down and have a conversation at a whole different level, and you can upskill yourself all the time. And when we know that and we understand that and we can do that from a business point of view, that just makes us more powerful. And you were talking there about people losing their jobs, and I really like to look at it from a different point of view. If you have 10 people now, and you can free them up from the grunge and from the grind and those things they don't like doing, and you can retrain them in the human elements that you need, you can really do with 10 people what you would need 100 people to do. So rather than thinking about getting rid of 4 people because you don't need them, think about upskilling them and doing 10 times, 50 times, 100 times more work and being more effective. And just changing that narrative of AI is going to change my job, take my job. AI is not going to take your job. AI, people with AI might take your job.
And one of the things we always say to people, because obviously what people are reacting to is uncertainty, right? Where there is a lot of uncertainty, people become afraid. There was a brilliant study that was done by University College London, and they said that when they told people that they had 100% chance of getting an electric shock, they didn't feel as stressed as when they were told that they had a 50% chance of getting an electric shock. So the maybe not was more stressful to them than the I know I'm going to have some pain a bit further down the road, but I'm like unprepared. So the uncertainty in our brains, we don't like it. And that uncertainty is around AI and what does it mean and the scaremongering. And you've got all these different reactions. You've got some people are burying their head in the sand. AI what? You got those that are like a knee-jerk reactions. Oh my God, I better learn all these things quick. Ah, I'm in danger. And then you've got people who are just like angry and all these kind of different reactions. And they're just our nervous system. And it's something called the uncertainty tax. And that tax is the energy and the time that we spend worrying about what that uncertainty might bring. And one of the things that we do with our kind of coaching, we're out with teams who are facing uncertainty and change, because that's basically just the general landscape now. That is the norm. Like when I go in and I say we coach people through uncertainty, they're like, that's just like life. And I'm like,
Have a desk.
So I'm like, yeah, you're right, that is. That's just stating the obvious. But that's the gift that we're giving you here. But one of the things we say to people is actually you can use that uncertainty. You don't have to let it overwhelm you. And that actually one of the most powerful things you can learn for yourself is reinvention. How can I reinvent myself in this moment? What does this moment afford me? It's an opportunity. One, it's an opportunity to grow and develop. But the second is I can reinvent myself. And actually, I don't have to fear the technology. Maybe I don't even have to use the technology, but I can definitely reinvent myself. And I think learning this ability, these skills, that mindset to be able to do that, we have a framework called mindset, skill set, tool set that we use with teams when we're coaching them to really thrive through uncertainty. It's that shift in your mind that I'm going to grow stronger from the adversity. I can use the opportunity here. It's that skill set of I can be more agile and adaptable. I can reinvent myself. And it's that tool set, that cultural tool set within a team dynamic of actually how are we going to build that trust? What does root us? What does ground us? What does hold us together? And that kind of mindset, skill set, tool set really helps people, I think, to understand how they need to elevate not just themselves, but the entire group dynamic, so that actually these things don't floor them, they don't derail them, but they're actually springboards, they're catalysts for that growth. And that's the game changer, right? That's your competitive edge right there and then.
Right, let's go back in time. Let's go back in time. Let's tell people a little bit about Sharon and where you come from, and you've given us some insight into the world you lived in. Maybe just touch on that. Who did you work for? Not maybe not allowed to say, maybe you are, I don't know.
Yeah, not so much.
And give us a little bit of the journey, because you've had such an interesting journey, to get to the point of being the heart officer. And I think you should have, as a function that you sell people, a virtual heart officer. So you can go
Yeah.
out and be a virtual heart officer.
We, I do offer that service actually, Roy. Funny you should mention it. A fractional chief heart officer role in the organizations, which is always one of my favorite things to do, because it gives you an opportunity to be inside the business and to be able to effectuate that kind of change. And it's a really beautiful journey to go on. But yeah, the journey, let's talk the journey. So let me start by starting, I guess, with a question, and maybe it's rhetorical, we don't necessarily need to ask this, but one of the questions that I always go in and I ask when, you know, when I'm giving a talk or when I'm going into an organization is, how many times do we hear leaders share what's on their heart? Like, how many times have you heard a leader share a tough time that they've gone through, how they might have grown from the adversity? Or how many times do we hear leaders even talk about tough times that they're currently going through? It's not really the norm still.
No,
And
you're right, yeah.
yeah, and I understand the political reasons behind it. I'm from the corporate world myself, so I understand the complexity of being in those kind of setups, that we can't just stand up and necessarily always just say these things. It's really important that we see people beyond just the title, that we see people beyond just the kind of facts, and that we see more than what people present on the outside, because we're all very adept at wearing masks, but what actually is happening underneath that is often something very different. And whenever I ask this question, like in a coaching session or if I'm in a talk, everyone immediately puts their heads down because everyone's worried that I'm going to ask them to share something. And I was like, don't worry. I'm not going to ask you to share anything right now. I'm going to come back to it, but not right now. But it does pose an interesting question, is that how many times do we go beyond those facts, beyond the title? And what I'm going to share with you now is going beyond the title. It's my story from the heart, quite literally, as a chief heart officer. And yeah, it's always something difficult to talk about, but something that has really shaped me and changed me and made me a better leader and made me a better person. And like I was alluding to earlier, it taught me how to grow stronger from really challenging times. It taught me how to reinvent myself through periods of change and uncertainty. And it taught me that actually speaking from the heart is actually a very powerful thing to be able to do. And that shift from being a very kind of focused leader on just kind of high performance to shifting to someone who could lead it high performance, but in a human-centered way, was a fantastic and important shift that needed to be made, and something that we're seeing a lot more now in organizations as they're trying to really embed that in the work that they do. So I guess this is, yeah, my story from the heart and me speaking from my heart. Because if I'm going to ask leaders to do this, I need to be able to do this myself too.
Percent.
Yeah. So I'm going to slightly give away my age now, because I'm going to say when I started working in 1999, so that was when I entered the workplace, I guess my leadership role models were kind of Gordon Gekko from Wall Street and Melanie Griffiths from Working Girl. With the shoulder pads, although I'm still partial to a shoulder pad even now. I think they're back in fashion, thankfully. Back then, we booked meeting rooms on paper. I had an old Nokia phone. It was like a brick. It could have gone through a nuclear explosion, and I think it actually still survived. It was heavy. It was as heavy as my handbag. At that point in time, I remember everyone was worried about like the Millennium Bug, and it was going to wipe out our computer infrastructure. So I remember that very well. And like back then, the world felt quite fast, right? It felt like things were changing, like there was like this momentum and this pace of change. But in hindsight, now that we think about it, the pace of change and the uncertainty that we're feeling right now is that was child's play in
Yeah.
comparison. And like now we're dealing with such seismic shifts in our world. I think actually it's a really challenging time for leaders, for teams in organizations, and just generally in humanity. Like many women of my generation, I came up in very male-dominated environments. And I learned the power plays, I learned the power moves. I was a real overachiever, extremely ambitious, very driven. Senior leaders loved me because I was all about the targets and how we're going to achieve things. And it was always about the next thing and what can I do and how can we drive faster and harder. It was all that kind of like power language. And I was very focused on how I can get my next promotion and what's the pay rise and how am I going to buy this house and I want this car. And it was the money and the power and all these things. And I was someone who I would describe as a bit of an accidental manager, as in I kept getting promoted because technically I was very good at the work that I did. But I was not a good people leader. I had fairly low EQ levels, I would say. I was all stick, no carrot. It was all like drive and do this. And if I can do it, you can do it. You know, there was much empathy going on. Yeah. So I
Very
don't
much
think.
of the time, very much of the time.
Yeah. Yeah. I wasn't at odds with the system. I was in the system and I was part of it and I was driving it. And I was successful on the outside to look at. And I remember back in, it was 2014, March 2014. I started to get quite unwell. And I went to see a doctor, and she was like, look, you need to have a surgery straight away. It's not life threatening, but you do need to see to this. So I was like, I was annoyed. It was like this was getting in the way of the ambition. And I remember going to talk to my manager, and I said, you look, they said I need a couple of weeks off to recover. I won't need a couple of weeks. I'll be back in a week. And I was planning what I was going to do when I was going to be back at work, already planning the next trip. And I was going to be in India for work at the end of the month, and everything was planned. And I didn't come back to work after a week. In fact, I almost never came back to work because the surgery that I had, though meant to be a very routine one, it went wrong, and the surgeon made a mistake. And she stitched me up and she sent me home and she said, look, I've repaired it. You'll be okay. You're fine to go home. And I was like, okay, great. Because I didn't want to get in the way of getting back to work in a week. And within about 48 hours, I was being rushed back to A&E. Thankfully, I was at my parents'. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here telling you this story. And I was being told by another doctor that I only had a few hours left to live. That actually the repair that the surgeon had made hadn't held, and I developed something called peritonitis. So peritonitis is like septicemia, and my organs were being poisoned because there was a hole in my bowel. And we didn't realize what was happening to me. We thought when I was having adverse reaction, we thought it was from the first surgery. And with peritonitis, if it doesn't get caught early enough, it's fatal. And so by the time I got to A&E, it had progressed really far. And so that's why they weren't sure whether they could save me or not. And it then became, you know, we need to operate on you straight away because you're not going to make it through the night. And I was only in my 30s, and I can remember I was with my dad. My mum had to excuse herself at that point because she just couldn't cope with what she was hearing. And I had this enormous kind of crystallization where I realized that actually I had spent so much of my life doing all these things to achieve these promotions and pay rises and buy the nice place and have the nice car, and none of that mattered. And in the end, when everything was about to be taken away from me, I realized that I had made an enormous mistake and that actually I had sacrificed love. I never got the chance to fall in love or have a family or do any of those kind of meaningful things. And
Yeah.
that in the end, when everything was about to be taken away from me, I realized that it wasn't worth it. N none of it was worth it.
Yeah.
And I can remember feeling awful inside of myself as I had this realization that I had really messed things up. And I didn't know whether I was going to get a chance to put it right. And I felt really afraid. And of course, I'm talking to you now. So of course I survived and I came through it. And I won't go into the details of the recovery because it is truly awful. But suffice to say, like I was completely broken after that surgery on a physical level, on a mental level, on an emotional, psychological level. And it took a long time before I was able to even do basic things like be able to walk and eat, and even just learning to take literally one step and get up from a hospital bed after that level of surgery was incredibly challenging. And it took every ounce of strength that I had within myself to be able to do it. And when I came out of the hospital and went back into the workplace, I want to be able to tell you that was the moment that I changed my life and I prioritized love and I became this chief heart officer that you see in front of you today. None of those things happened. Not one. I went back and I did all of the exact same things all over again. I threw myself into work. I went and got an even more senior job than the one that I had beforehand. I got made a partner in a really big media company. And I took on more stress and did more work and pushed myself. Because although I had this intense moment of clarity when I was on my deathbed, actually, when I came out of that environment and I came back into the real world, where everyone around me was like saying, be more resilient, do mindfulness, do these things. And actually, every time I tried to piece my life back together, it kept breaking again. And I felt intense uncertainty, and I honestly didn't know how to navigate it. And I liken it to like when you have a vase and it's shattered into a million pieces around you. That's what my life felt like. And I kept trying to pick up these pieces and glue it back together. Glue this vase back together. And every time I did it, it kept shattering more and more. So I kept trying to go back to the person I was beforehand because that's what felt safe. That's what I was familiar with. But I couldn't go back. And everyone was like, you need to bounce back. That's what the mantra is around resilience. You need to bounce back. And I couldn't. And it felt harder and harder. And then in September 2015, so a year and a half after I'd gone through those two surgeries, I had an enormous breakdown. Only this time it was mental and emotional. And I couldn't go on. The mask had really fallen. Like I couldn't wear it anymore and I couldn't hide it. And I was so utterly devastated and broken. I honestly didn't know where to turn. And I can remember saying to my family, help me. Help me. I don't know what to do. And I'm from an Indian family, an Indian background. Culturally, we don't really talk about mental health. We don't talk about, I didn't even know the language of trauma then. This is pre-pandemic. We weren't talking about trauma and PTSD beyond, say, for veterans from the army. And I just didn't understand any of these things. And I remember going to a therapist and just crying. And she said to me, you know what, Sharon, you're going to cry a lot now, like a lot. And boy, she wasn't joking. I think I spent months crying. I was still working, by the way, at this time because I couldn't give up work because work was such a core part of my identity. And I think I needed it. I needed it alongside the crying. So I was doing both. I was going through this intense kind of pain, but also showing up for work. And I think that helped me a lot. That kind of gave me the structure and I really needed it. And I remember one day I was talking to my older sister and I was really struggling. And she said to me, Sharon, you really need to find your silver lining in all this. Otherwise, it's going to destroy you. And I remember afterwards thinking about her words and I was like, she's right. Yeah, I have gone through something like truly awful that I wouldn't ever wish on anyone. But at the same time, I like it can make me better. I can grow from this. And that realization really changed how I saw what I'd gone through. And it made me realize that instead of trying to put back the vase and glue it back together, that instead I needed to create a mosaic,
Yeah, I love
a mosaic of many different colored tiles that I could glue together in my own shape. And that actually that mosaic was far more resilient than the vase that I was trying to put back together, because this mosaic was actually more agile, it was more adaptable, it was more flexible, and that I could create it as I was going along and as I was growing and as I was finding my own light through that very dark tunnel and realizing that actually I could emerge stronger from it. And I think in many ways, I'm still creating that mosaic. I'm still adding the tiles to it and taking them away and putting in new ones as I grow and learn and develop. And I think as well, that kind of moment, that kind of crystallization, it was a different kind of moment to the one that I had in my deathbed, because I think that this one actually really helped me to see that I could grow stronger from the challenge, that actually I didn't need to let that challenge define me or defeat me, that actually I could leverage it and become a better person and a better leader as a result of it. And so when I went back into the workplace, I say I went back in, I never really left the workplace, but I think when I went in through with new eyes almost, and I saw things through a very different lens. One, I could see how everyone else around me was struggling, which I don't think I'd ever really recognized beforehand. But two, I recognized that actually I had an intense opportunity here to be able to help the people around me so that we could deliver this high performance in a more human-centered way. And that really, that understanding that actually our hardest moments can make us stronger, that we can actually leverage these things and we can become better leaders, tougher leaders. And I don't mean the old school tough. Hey, grit, push through, just be determined, never just keep going. And I think all those things are good things, but actually there's a different kind of toughness now, isn't there? There's, like we were speaking about earlier, that kind of human intelligence, that ability to be able to be more agile, to be more adaptable, to be more flexible, to be able to leverage uncertainty and use it to your advantage, to be able to take people with you on a journey, to be able to foster that trust, to be able to help those around you to grow and to be at their best. That's the toughest kind of leadership, because actually that's much harder. It's almost easier to be a command and control leader and say, you do this, you do that, and not deal with the other stuff. It's harder.
Internally tough, isn't it?
Yeah, internally tough. Yeah.
Have to really look at yourself. And I
Yeah.
have a question for you. Would you change any of it?
No. No.
Insane, huh? Insane.
No. Not in a million years. I am who I am because of that experience. And I firmly believe I needed that experience to change, because I had loads of red flags before then. My God, my poor mum and dad, boy, did they tell me, they were like, you are on the one-way ticket to losing, your health is deteriorating. Like, parents are the only ones who will ever really tell you the truth. And I just ignored it. It wasn't just parents. I had managers who tried to intervene, who were like, Sharon, this is unsustainable. You know, don't get me wrong, there were leaders who were like, keep going, because I was delivering. It was a bit of a balance. And I guess it was what I wanted to listen to. But the red flags were so clearly there, and I ignored them. And that experience that I went through, it might have almost killed me, but the truth is, it saved me, because it saved me, my soul, who I am as a human being, and it's made me the person I am today. And because I went through that experience, it made me not just rethink things for myself, not just rethink how I led my teams, but it made me think, oh my God, like I went through something awful and I learned these things the hard way. But shouldn't we all be learning these things? Like, we don't need a crisis to learn how to deal with uncertainty. We don't need a crisis to learn how to be more agile or flexible. We don't need a crisis to show up as a better leader. They've got this brilliant saying, I think it's in the Navy SEALs, in moments of pressure, we don't rise to the occasion, we sink to the level of our training. And that really that made me think, like, how unprepared we all are to deal with all of this uncertainty, these challenges that we're going through, not just in our lives, but in the working space as well. And what kind of training are we getting? And that really set me on this path of I became a coach as a result of it. I studied positive psychology because I was like, what is this resilience? What is this? What is it really? I came across the work of Nassim Taleb. His work in anti-fragility teaches us that we can grow stronger from shocks and challenges. So think Airbnb in the pandemic, when they shifted their model because of the pandemic and they grew stronger from it. Or the racing driver Ayrton Senna, who said, you can't overtake 15 cars in the sunshine, but you can do it in the rain. So you can use the hard things to actually grow stronger. The tools that they use in the US military, embrace the Stockdale paradox, all of these things, they teach you how to use the hard things to get stronger, as well as Stoic philosophy. That actually learning those hard things, because we're in a world where I think we've gone too far in the other way, the other direction, where actually we are prioritizing comfort to the point where we don't learn how to do hard things. And actually, that is inhibiting our growth, because when hard things do happen, and they are going to happen, how do we rise to that occasion? We don't have the training for it. Now, a lot of people will be listening to this and thinking, please, I think my life is hard enough as it is. Fair enough. There are lots of hard things happening. But what I'm talking about is the right kind of hard. And actually, you can train yourself to do the right kind of hard from a very young age that actually will enable you to be more resilient, to be able to not just bounce back, but bounce forward. And that is the
Yeah, I mean,
skill.
that's kind of why I get in an ice bath every morning. I don't like doing it. Do I like getting up at 5:30 in the morning and 4:30 in the morning, whatever it is? Yeah, and then getting in a 4-degree ice bath? Yeah, not really. But you can build your resilience. You can build by doing the right hard things. 100% what you say.
You can build that capacity. The other day I was with my, so I have an 8-year-old, a 7-year-old daughter, and she loves mindset training, coaching. Of course, she's my daughter. And before we do her homework together, she's always, Mummy, teach me a mindset tool. So the other day on the weekend, I said, all right, I'm going to teach you how to swallow the frog. And she was like, eh, disgusting. What's that? I said, no, you're not actually going to swallow a frog. I'm going to teach you the concept of it. And she was, I said, okay. So I said, I want you to lay out your homework in front of me. And I want you to tell me what is the hardest piece of homework that you got out of everything. And she was like, oh, it's the writing sentence. She hates writing sentences. And so I was like, okay. So I said, that's the hardest bit, right? I said, swallowing the frog is learning to do the hardest thing first. I said, because when you do the hardest thing first, you feel more confident. You feel like you've really achieved something. You feel like, oh, I've got that out the way. The other things will feel easier as a result, and you feel better about it. So I said, do this first, and then the other work, you'll fly through it. So she said, I'm going to swallow the frog. So she did it. And she did. She sailed through the rest of her homework. She worked more independently. She didn't want me as much, and she felt really proud of herself. And now, as a result, every day she comes to me and she says, today I swallowed the frog. And so she's learning that from an early age. And those are really important. They're not just life skills, but they're actually skills that she can use in school when she gets into the workplace later as well. They're the things that really set you up, that make you realize that actually I can do hard things and I can become stronger as a result of it. Like, we don't choose life's challenges, but we can choose how we rise through them. And I think that is really crucial to building the right kind of resilience, because I think resilience has got a really bad rap. And the other thing I want to say is, before I stop talking about the story, is resilience isn't something that is just something you train within yourself. It's also a lot to do with the environment within which you operate, which is why we do this on a kind of team level, because actually it's as much about the people who are around you and the way that you all operate together that will actually cultivate resilience within people. So yeah, there are mindset shifts, but it's also to do with collectively, how do we grow stronger together? And that is really crucial.
Amazing. What a heartfelt story. Thank you so much for sharing that. Yeah, and I don't
Pleasure.
really know how to go on from that. That's really amazing. And let's just, you're going to be doing this heart role for years to come. And how can people get hold of you? When should they get hold of you? And how can you help their teams?
Yes, so there's two main groups who can we work with. One is leadership teams who are newly formed leadership teams or ones who are going through a period of change. So maybe they've had lots of new members join the team. They really need to align quickly and really work through how they can leverage the kind of challenges and really grow stronger from it. Or it's leaders of teams who, again, their team is going through another period of kind of big change, and they're really looking to increase the improve the output, the resilience, and improve the culture of their team. That's the kind of two main ways that companies tend to work with us. We do provide large-scale training courses as well, which are online. But typically, that's where the kind of leaders and organizations reach out to us. And that's what we love because that's the opportunity to do the deep work with those teams and really be able to work with them over a kind of 6 month period, really watch them grow and develop and see them become more successful, which is really wonderful and it warms my heart and warms theirs as well. We're all high heart, high performance here. So, yeah, we're really spreading that joy, but giving people really practical tools as well. Like I said, I learned all those tools and those strategies, but also I've applied all of them myself in a corporate space, having been a corporate leader myself, as well as the other coaches on my team. So I think it's that real world experience. It's not just a personal experience. It's not just a great story. It's not just I learned some tools. It's actually, we've got the battle scars to prove it and having done it ourselves. But yeah, if anyone is interested in working with us, reach out to me on LinkedIn. You can find me on there, Sharon and Aja. Also, our website, humanityworksconsultancy.com. Get in touch. We are here, we're excited, and we really want to see teams in companies become really successful and become tougher in the right kind of way. And I think, as Gary Vee said, we need more, human-centered workplaces. We need that balance of high performance delivered in a human-centered way. It's absolutely the future. And those are the organizations where we see people's stress resiliency levels being much higher. Their output is much stronger and they're much happier, happier teams. And Roy, that's the key, isn't it? When people are happy in their work and they feel fulfilled, that's where we see much stronger business outcomes for organizations. Yeah, we're excited for this new chapter. It's a great
Amazing.
time to be in the space.
So I would like you to just think of one sentence that you can leave, a stressed out person in the corporate world. That's an inspiring sentence, a lesson that you've learned in your life. What can they do? What can they not do? How can they step forward? How can they step and go?
Yeah. So I would say there's pain that uses you and there's pain that you use. So there's difficult things that you will go through, difficult challenges, and I think so many of them are facing such incredible challenges right now. You can either let that determine and crush you, or you can say, I'm going to leverage this. And there's a brilliant tool that they use in the US Army called Embrace the Suck. And I think that's really important right now because we don't need to have a world in which we're operating in toxic positivity or blind optimism. Everything's going to be fine. Everything's going to be fine. That doesn't work. We have to be able to acknowledge and lean into the hard time, the challenge that's in front of us, the uncertainty that you have around maybe jobs within your team, or maybe it's for your own job. Or maybe it's you're not sure about the next strategic move you should be playing. So we need to be able to embrace that suckiness and at the same time, really be able to acknowledge that we're going to find a way forward. that we believe in ourselves. I believe in myself. I believe in this team, and we're going to co-create this future together. And I might not have all the answers right now, but I'm going to help light the ground around us, and we're going to have this conversation together. There's a really interesting piece of work called the Stockdale Paradox. And within that, again, it's from the army, they talk about how the people who actually struggled the most in challenging times are actually the optimists, which sounds weird because we're told that we should be more optimistic. But it's actually the people who can lean into the challenge, the kind of pragmatic optimists, if that makes sense, but who also believe that they can find a way through it. And it might not be the way that they had initially thought, but that they understand that they might need to adapt and be more agile and be more flexible, and then they can move forward. Right now, I think one of the key skills you as a leader can actually coach yourselves and your teams on is managing paradoxes. Because everything is a paradox right now. We've got to focus on short-term growth, but also see to long-term goals. We've got to embrace the hard time and be able to move through it. Most people see things as either-ors. Either I do this or I do that. And they're always trying to fix one or the other. But actually, the world is just polarities. They're just polarities. And you have to be able to learn how to manage those tensions. You don't just do one or the other, or you don't try to fix one or the other. It's about managing the tension that exists between these two things that feel like polar opposites, but exist because of each other. And those are really important skills that leaders and teams need to be able to learn so that they can navigate the complexity that uncertainty brings. And actually, that is how you build what we call resilience 2.0. That's how you bounce forward and not just bounce back. And that is the future. And those are the skills of the future. So don't just think AI, think also HI, human intelligence as well, because you won't be able to leverage these future opportunities if you don't have those human skills to go with it. They are the absolute foundation that you need in order to be able to really thrive through these moments of change.
Amazing. Thank you very much for joining me. It's been a pleasure. Thank you for sharing your story. I will put your details so people can contact you below. And I look forward to hearing you from you in the future. We'll do another one of these and talk about other things.
Thank you, Roy. Thank you so much. It's been wonderful.
For listening to Power Movers, the podcast from All the Power, where our mission is to help business owners reclaim their time, reset their energy, and live the life they love. If this episode sparked something for you, your next step is simple. Take the fit check at allthepower.co.uk. It's a short clarity tool that helps you see where you are, what's getting in the way, and what might be possible if you have the right system. When you're ready, come and join the tribe. Power Movers start with our signature framework called Elevate 360, a system built to help you escape survival mode, create structure, and move forward with power. Just remember, everything we share here is based on real stories, experience, and frameworks. It's not personal business advice. Always speak to a coach or advisor before making big decisions. Because in the end, it's about more than business. It's about building a life that you actually love. I'm Roy Castleman, and I'll see you in the next episode.